Welcome back. In this fifth chapter, we are going to talk about staffing at UN Habitat. Firstly, I'd like to ask that what your assessment is of UN staff after having worked with hundreds of them. In principle, UN staff should be top quality, but is this really the case?
Yes, I worked with hundreds of staff of UN Habitat, but also with staff of other agencies. UN staff, you have to know, is very diverse, most diverse in any organization. And for instance, in my division, only at headquarters, I have 25 nationalities. This staff is not easy to recruit, it takes a long time to recruit, and it's also not easy to manage. But generally speaking, they are doing relatively well. Recruitment processes are very heavy, very slow, not always equitable, as I mentioned earlier, because there is a lot of nepotism, particularly from the heads of many agencies. And managers, unfortunately, have no stick and no carrot. That is, you cannot give any award, any promotion to your staff in most cases. And also, you cannot separate staff who are not performing. So it's a bit difficult to manage. In general, I would say that staffing is a mixed bag. In Habitat, I think that we have like 25% of dead wood, 25% maybe of what I could call sequoia wood, that is outstanding staff, and 50% of good acacia wood, that is people who are working fine but need more guidance and more motivation. So that's maybe the same situation in many international organizations, even in private companies. But this has a lot of political dimension. You know that staff are recruited based on geographical and gender balance, and sometimes it's difficult to attract good staff to our jobs, particularly in the developing world, where people can get better jobs, better than the UN jobs. Let me just say a few words on geographical balance. You have to ensure that. I think I did my best, for instance, to improve the position of the developing world in my division with some success. In terms of gender mainstreaming, it's a very good principle, of course, but it is applied in a very dogmatic way in the UN. The UN is not known for its fantastic gender research or publication, which are generally very poor, and we remain at the stage, I think, of what I call primitive feminism. The difficulty for us has been to attract qualified women to Nairobi, which is not very friendly. The city is not very friendly with women. It has quite a bad reputation, unfortunately. But we have to recruit more female candidates, which means affirmative action, which means you recruit less qualified female candidates when necessary to achieve your gender balance. So that's quite a challenge. I did this myself, but this is a way to promote the cause of women in the UN. It is very clear that as a white male, you need to bring your own funding with you if you want to be recruited. That's a kind of a new pattern of recruitment in the UN, which is well understood, for instance, by the Scandinavian countries. But I think women should be given a chance. Some of them are performing very well, but I have to say that when they get a managerial position, most women manage exactly in the same way as men. So there is a male-dominated style of management, which is, of course, not new. And when women are in power, they just adopt this style of management almost systematically. So I don't see any difference in between female management and male management. But that's a footnote in terms of staffing. I think in the UN Charter, we recognize that appointments should be based on merit. Unfortunately, there is a real contradiction between this nice principle and the issue of balance, of geographical and gender balance, and we have to live with that. We have to accept that merit-based appointments are the rule, but we have also to accept that politically you need to reach a better gender and geographical balance, and This contradiction is part of the art of management, and I think many managers are able to deal with that contradiction relatively well.
Thank you. What would you say is your opinion about staff performance in that case? Is it really as bad as has been reported by some media? Or what qualifications are you actually looking for?
I think as UN staff, we are the civil servants of the world. We are independent, we are objective, we don't report to any particular country, we don't report to any particular private interest. We are the civil servants of the world. And we are also relatively well paid. So in view of that, I think generally that UN staff must perform better. Some UN staff, after years, are really basically what I call the dead wood, almost asleep. And this, we can give a number of examples, particularly in research department, particularly in normative department, where there is no real benchmark to assess performances. And also in the administration, of course, there are a number of bureaucrats which tend to abuse their power and try to harass the rest of the staff. So there are a number of examples of that. There are also examples of outstanding staff working 12 hours a day and delivering a lot of good for the world. So there are, I would say, a mixed bag. There is a mixed bag of staff. The problem is the selection system. I think the selection system is not adequate. It is changing, in fact, every 2 or 3 years. Now we have a new system called Inspira, which is not very good, which is extremely slow and bureaucratic. Before, we had another one called Galaxy, and it changed all the time according to the fashion in New York. But all these systems are not transparent and always allow manipulation by leaders, that is nepotism. So therefore, you get staff, some good staff, some bad staff, and you have no control over that. And there is no, in fact, decentralized, at least in Habitat, decentralized selection process. Also, we rely a lot on private external consultants to do some core work, which should be done by staff. That's another weakness that we have to address. But I would like to focus on the evolution of staff profile in UN Habitat. When I came to Habitat, we were still recruiting architects, because at that time there was a shortage of architects in developing countries, particularly in Africa. This is no longer the case. In fact, now there is a profusion of architects, and we don't recruit architects anymore. What we need now are more managers, urban economists, specialists in finance and social science. So this has evolved. The profile of staff has really evolved in 20 years. Now we should focus more on policy development, policy reform, and we need less and less construction engineers, which are plenty in the developing world. And we should also combine skills, multidisciplinary skills, economic, social, environmental, political science, all together. Myself, I went through this kind of curricula, and I think this is what you need in the UN. Multidisciplinary teams, but also people with different background in their curriculum and different experience, of course. So that's what is needed. This is evolving fast, and management, of course, is has a difficulty in changing the staff, which normally have long-term contracts, even if they are 2 years contract. In fact, they are life contract most of the time. So it's quite difficult to adjust your human resource to the real needs.
Well, that all sounds like there are lots of problems to be dealt with, but in spite of this, can you see any light at the end of the tunnel?
I think as in any organization, the human factor is the most important. It's not the financial factor, it's not the administration, it's the human factor. And in Habitat, we have the chance to be small, and to have a lot of good experts, substantive experts, that is, town planner, housing specialist, urban geographist, etc. And I should pay tribute to a number of great professionals, who are also, most of them, very good friends of mine, with whom I have worked over these years. And I want to mention a few of them, at least for the record. I have to mention Paul Buddha, who was my first boss. He was the chief of the Africa and West Asia unit of Habitat. I wish to mention another German, Heinz Kuhl, was very soft-spoken, very polite, and very precise in his work, always delivering on time, retired in Berlin. Roberto Ottolenghi, Italian colleague who spoke at least 5 or 6 languages, and who has become, in fact, after retirement, an excellent consultant, including in post-disaster countries. Disa Virapana from Sri Lanka, also very, very clear, very substantive, and very diplomatic. Madame Matima from Nepal, whose reports were a piece of jewelry, I would say, meticulous and very, very to the point. Jorge Gavidia from Peru, very practical, and who started with Ein School the disaster management program. Of course, Alioune Badiane, Senegalese politician, he wants to be a politician, but above all, a good urban manager and good manager of the Regional Office for Africa. I should not forget those from the research side, like Pietro Garau, which sometimes we had debates which were quite tense, and he was sometimes a pain in the neck, but a good, very good writer. Mathias Unsas, my old friend, who was managing with myself the negotiation of the Habitat Agenda in Istanbul. Emil Wegelin from the Netherlands, a bit complicated and sophisticated, very good analyst. Jochen Eigen, who invited the Sustainable Cities Program and its various tools. A bit paranoid sometimes, Jochen, but always extremely motivated. Dinesh Mehta from Hyderabad, who spent a number of years with the Urban Management Program, sometimes a bit too close to World Bank, but because of his wife, of course, and who was working for the bank. Mark Hildebrand, who was my boss, and was, in fact, number two of Habitat during the Istanbul conference from 1994 to 1997, and who became the founder of the Cities Alliance. Darshan Johal, very calm, very safe, very, very tranquil, and always a good supporter of technical cooperation. Thomas Sudra, who created the capacity building program of Habitat with his loud voice. He didn't need any telephone. Joe Mungai, the loafing diplomat, I call him, and who became after retirement a very serious entrepreneur in Nairobi. Nick Yu, who had the longest CV by far of all staff of Habitat. Eduardo Moreno and Nyson Mutiswa, the twin writers of the two reports in competition, the Global Report and the State of the World Cities. And I can mention more and younger staff, of course. I just focus on the old guys. But of course, there were also some women. This I have noticed so far, as you have noted, I have not mentioned any women, but there were a number of women who also worked quite well in Habitat, like Nefise, Cecilia, Dorothée, Axomite, Liliana, Mariko, and of course my beloved Teresa. So there are many, many women who worked quite a lot for Habitat, but generally in our field, the urban field remains today, as of today, male-dominated. And this has to be compared to architecture. Architecture was male-dominated, but has become female-dominated. And this may reflect the well-known difference in social science between public space dominated by men and private space dominated by women. All that to say that, in a word, that we had excellent, excellent expertise in Habitat. Very strong expertise, very weak administration. This is a challenge. This has been the challenge for me from day one. Excellent expertise, very weak administration. And this, I think, is a challenge for the entire UN system.
Well, thank you for outlining so clearly the strengths and the weaknesses and the room for improvement that there is in the UN system. I think this is a very useful piece of advice for a lot of people running UN agencies or working in the UN around the world.